Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Pharmacy Interoperability and Emerging Therapeutics Task Force. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are glad that you can join us. We also have several guest presenters with us today, and I'd like to welcome them and thank them for joining us as well. This task force meeting is open to the public, and your comments are welcome in Zoom chat throughout the meeting or during the public comment period that will be held around 11:50 Eastern Time this morning. I'd like to start roll call of our task force members, so when I call your name, please indicate if you are here, and I'll begin with our co-chairs. Hans Bloetendijk.
Good morning.
Kelly Spiro.
Good morning.
Pooja Babra.
Good morning, I'm here.
Chris Blackley.
Good morning.
Tyler Blend. David Butler.
Good morning.
Steve Eichner. Thank you. Steve Eichner.
Present. Good morning.
Raj Gavarti will be joining us a little later. Adi Gunlapalli.
Good morning.
Tim Georges. Amar Kalan is on vacation this week. Stephen Lane.
Good
Meg
morning.
Marshall. Thank you, Stephen. Meg Marshall. Anna McAllister. Devin McGraw.
Good morning.
Ethan Mehta. Justin Neal.
Good morning, everyone.
Elio Oliveira.
I'm here. Good morning.
Nirish Thunderbrajan.
I'm here. Good morning.
Scott Robertson.
Good morning. I'm here.
Alexis Snyder is also on vacation this week. Phil Sutherland. Christian Tadris.
I'm present.
Sarah Attorney.
Good morning.
And Afton Wagner.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you, everyone. Now please join me in welcoming Hans and Shelley for their opening remarks.
Good morning, everybody. I'll start. Really looking forward to today's discussion on the long-term topics, how case reporting may address some of the areas as well. So I can't wait to dive in. Want to thank everybody for joining on the task force and those from the public. Looking forward to your comments as well. You can do that in the chat throughout the entire discussion. And then at the end, surely you have an opportunity as well to further highlight that. So can't wait to dive in. Shelley.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Truly appreciate all of your insight, the great conversations. Continue to put information into the chat. We're so thankful for everyone for bringing pharmacy to the forefront on these very important issues. I want to thank our presenters in advance today from the CDC to help us get through all of this. So appreciate it. Thank you very much and looking forward to our discussion today. Take it away, Hans.
All right, sorry, I had to unblock my mutes. So what we're going to start out with today is a presentation by a number of guests. We will have Laura Kahn with CDC and talking about electronic case reporting and the roles that CDC has in rolling out, as well as Lim Gibbs-Sharf, Chief Informatics and Data Analytics Branch, also CDC, and Aganabil Khan, Dr. Khan, and also from the CDC, and looking forward to hear more about what has happened with case reporting over the last couple of years, where it's heading, and particularly also in that context and where our discussion is going to be looking at as well, how can we apply that, take advantage of it, what do we need to do advance from a pharmacist interoperability perspective and overall perspective there during emergencies and otherwise. So looking forward to that, and I'm going to pass it to the first speaker. And is that correct, Laura? Is that you or is somebody else going to jump in?
Looks like it's me, Hans. Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you to the group for the invitation. I'll spend a few minutes talking about electronic case reporting, and then I particularly look forward to the discussion of the pharmacy needs and in any way that we could, you know, work together moving forward. So next slide, just some background. I think as was evident with the COVID-19 pandemic and really in routine times as well, timely and complete patient data is critical for public health to do its job. And reporting of a number of conditions of significance to public health is required in all states and territories in this country. So historically, that reporting has happened by manual process, sometimes phone calls, sometimes faxes, sometimes mail, unfortunately. So we've been working to automate that process and take advantage of data that now exists in electronic health records by automating the generation and transmission of case reports from health records in healthcare to public health agencies for review and action. There's currently 208 conditions that can be reported using this electronic opportunity now. Those include things like COVID and tuberculosis. Mostly people think of reportable conditions in the infectious diseases space, but we also cover a number of conditions that are reportable in chronic diseases such as cancer and non-infectious diseases like Parkinson's or opioid overdose, birth defects, those kinds of elevated blood lead or other examples. So next slide. So how does it work? This is just broad stroke, but when a patient sees a provider in healthcare and a healthcare provider enters their patient information into a health record, there are a number of trigger codes that are provided by public health that if those codes are entered into the patient's health record, like a diagnosis or a laboratory order or a laboratory result, would trigger the creation of a case report that would then be provided to public health to determine if it meets reporting needs. And if it meets reporting needs, that report is provided to a specific public health agency of where it met that reporting criteria. Once the public health agency receives that case report, a real-time response goes back to the healthcare organization that sent it for the provider to say, this is the condition that was reported. This is where it was reported to and can provide any additional information in the context of that condition back to the provider from the public health agency. And then the public health agency can take that information in real time and start its public health action. And in the early days of COVID, it was contact tracing. For other conditions, there are different actions that can be taken. Next slide. This one is more of the architecture of how the system works itself. Starting on the left-hand side, we have a provider using their EHR. In the middle, we have a shared services platform. And on the right-hand side, we have public health agency. So as I mentioned, across the top, public health provides a set of trigger codes based on those conditions that are reportable. And electronic health record products have a couple of ways to do electronic case reporting. Some vendors build that capacity into their product directly, and some use what has been developed as an ECR Now Fire app that's freely available for providers to use. If those trigger codes are matched in the electronic health record, a standard electronic case report is created. It's called the EICR. It's currently in a CDA format, but we also have a Fire format as that standard advances. That is sent over to an intermediary platform. On the intermediary platform is where public health agencies have provided their reporting rules so that as case reports come over, those case reports can be compared to jurisdictional reporting requirements and when reportable can be sent on then to the appropriate public health agency. And that can be either based on where care was provided or based on where the patient lives or both, so that cross-jurisdictional reporting can occur. There is a feedback loop in the reportability response represented by RR on this slide. And that is the document that I mentioned that tells what was reportable, where it was reportable to, and any additional information. This is facilitated by a trust framework or a policy path that's built on top of existing health information networks like eHealth Exchange, Care Quality, and Commonwealth that allows this platform to do the reporting on behalf of healthcare without any additional legal agreements needing to be put in place for those participants in those networks. Next slide. So I wanted to share with you the data elements, and there's a lot on here, that are included in a case report. This is the release 1.1 of the CDA. The fire is consistent with this, and this is what is operational now. Particularly wanted to point out in this for you, and for this group, the medications administered and immunization status, but you can see a broad swath of clinical data in addition to just demographics about the patient that are important for public health. Next slide. We've done an update to the standard as well, and you can see here additional information that's been added based on our lessons learned of implementation through COVID medication upon admission, medications administered, historical medications, planned medications, and additional immunization status information. So next slide. Just to give you a quick sense of our progress to date, we were in pilot stage at the beginning of COVID, and we really have ramped up nationwide during the pandemic. And so today we have, actually I looked earlier today, we have over 27,000 facilities in production with ECR, 27% of hospitals, 25% of critical access hospitals, 10% of FQHCs, and about 10% of ambulatory facilities that are staffed by at least one MIPS provider. And this ECR is a required metric and public health measure in the CMS Promoting Interoperability Program. Next slide. So what's made this successful? We use a shared scalable infrastructure. It allows for a single connection point from healthcare organizations to that, that platform. So providers onboard once and can report to all public health agencies. We established that single data standard that's used for all reportable conditions. And we have a policy framework that's built on existing health information networks. So those one-off data use agreements, data sharing agreements don't have to be put in place. We have a secure pathway for data exchange that supports all reportable conditions. It captures the data identified by public health as what's necessary for public health action and meets those jurisdictional reporting requirements for providers. So our ultimate goal is to get rid of move on past manual reporting to this electronic reporting and reduce the burden really on both sides of public health and of healthcare. And it's proven flexible to allow reporting needs to change over time. We ramped up quickly for COVID. I guess it was almost a year ago or maybe a little more than that. Now we added monkeypox as monkeypox became a condition of importance. And as I mentioned, we're at 208 conditions now. So we really have a single target for healthcare providers to be able to report to public health for all conditions into all jurisdictions. One thing I'll just wrap up here with is to say, especially I think in for this group to consider is some of our, as we're working through and learning about this data, the data consistency and data quality, especially in data that needs, for public health purposes to analyze, needs to be coded, is an area that we're continuing to work on. I suspect that will be an area in this space with medication codes, maybe immunization codes. My colleagues that will follow, I suspect, may talk about that as well. But would be happy to have some of those conversations and discussion and understand more of your needs. So thank you for the time. Look forward to the discussion.
Thank you, Laura.
Who will be going next? Or shall we hold questions till the end, or should we entertain some questions? I see that Stephen Eich has his hand raised. Why don't we, is it okay, Ike, if we can hold the questions till the end, and then we'll have you first in the queue?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's do that. And let's then go on to the next speaker. Thank you, Laura.
Okay, good morning, everyone. This is Lynn Gibb-Scharf. Nabil is on the line, but a little under the weather and has lost his voice. So we're going to try to spare him for questions. But thank you for inviting us today. We're really excited to be able to share a little bit about our pharmacy, our COVID-19 pharmacy program and the associated data. So if we could go to the next slide, please. So the Federal Retail Pharmacy Program is a public-private partnership that involves 21 national pharmacy partners, and that includes more than 41,000 pharmacy locations nationwide, representing a variety of different types of programs, including long-term care pharmacies. As of the beginning of this week, there were about 304 million COVID-19 vaccine doses administered through this retail pharmacy program. That represents about 44.5% of all COVID-19 vaccine doses administered through the federal program. Our pharmacy partners have supported efforts in a variety of ways, including providing on-site clinics to reach specific populations, such as teachers, colleges, schools, and long-term care. Next slide, please. This is just a list of all of the different pharmacy partners participating in the COVID-19 program. On the left, you can see the chain partners, which consists of a number of different sites within a particular chain. There are 13 of those. We also have what we call network partners, which are coalitions of pharmacies, essentially, working together. And that makes up the total of 21. Next slide. This is just to give you a little bit of a flavor of what the Federal Retail Pharmacy Program administrations look like. On the left, you can see where those doses have been administered across the country. On the right, I know that's very hard to see, but the blue line is all administrations and the orange line is pharmacy. So you can see that they have been major contributors to the overall COVID-19 vaccination effort in the US. Next slide, please. This is the administration data flow for pharmacies. Pharmacies have been early vaccine administration partners from the beginning of the COVID-19 program. As far as data goes, they send data directly to the COVID-19 data clearinghouse using what we call the COVID-19 Vaccine Reporting Specification, or CVRS. That specification is available on the CDC website if that is of interest. In addition, pharmacies also send data to immunization information systems in many jurisdictions, and they use HL7 VXU22 messages for that exchange. The HL7-based capabilities have increased over time and throughout the response. Similarly, all COVID data in the IIS is submitted to the data clearinghouse using that same CVRS specification. So we really have to some degree, dual pharmacy reporting going on here, directly to the data clearinghouse, as well as into IISs in many cases. At CDC, we developed capability to receive, validate, process this data, and later in the response, added the capability to update and delete records that were previously submitted in bulk by jurisdictions, and a number of jurisdictions and pharmacy partners have taken advantage of that capability to make changes to their data over time as they get additional information as well. All of the data is made available downstream for analysis and reporting by multiple systems, including the CDC COVID Data Tracker, which is a public website that includes a variety of metrics and visualizations of the COVID-19 vaccination data, as well as Tiberius and HHS Protect. The immunization data lake plays the role of the core data hub here for all vaccine ordering and vaccine administration data. At CDC, we developed methods to deduplicate and link records that were reported by different entities in order to accurately determine dose counts, series completion rates, and follow-up administration of COVID vaccine. So for advanced data linkage functions, privacy-preserving record linkage, or PPRL services, were utilized for linking doses in a manner that enables that linkage to happen while still preserving the privacy of the PII and PHI. I think we were going to stop there. Nabil, is there anything that I missed that you would like to add?
No, thank you, Lynn. You covered it all. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you all, and we would be happy to answer questions.
Thank you all very much. And I believe, Ike, you're first.
Thank you so much. I was just going to add on a little additional information on ECR, and that's basically each state health department or each state law has laws that define what is reportable within that state. There is a core set that's used pretty much nationwide, but each state in each locality can add to that list about what's reportable in that particular jurisdiction and what entities are required to report data. ECR is also a little bit different than electronic laboratory reporting. Laura, would you mind differentiating the two?
Sure. Thanks, Steve. Sorry, I was trying to get that double mute off. So yeah, so electronic case reporting covers the reporting required by healthcare providers in a state. Electronic lab reporting is a requirement of laboratories, and there's definitely overlap in the conditions that need to be reported from labs and from providers. Laboratories obviously don't have the detailed clinical information that is required of a provider to send through through a case report. And really both are used at the public health agency. They're both very important data sources to be pulled together to see the complete picture. But there are also a number of conditions on the reportable condition list required by providers to report that don't necessarily have laboratory tests or results associated with them. So they're very complementary. They are pulled together and matched when there are lab results for a condition at the public health agency to really pull that full picture together for public health action.
And Laura, can you just paint I think you touched on it briefly. Can you just do a real quick overview of the AIMS platform and the way that information gets from people submitting data to public health?
Absolutely. So the AIMS platform is an intermediary that sits between the healthcare organization and public health agencies. The relationship through the trust framework is that the AIMS platform is a business associate, essentially, of the healthcare organization to assist with reporting to the appropriate public health agency. So there's a number of services that sit on the AIMS platform, including validation, including, I'm not sure I called it by name, but the reportable conditions knowledge management system is that system that the public health agencies put their reporting requirements into, so that when there's, as Steve said, each jurisdiction can define their reporting requirements. So when, you know, Oregon wants a blood lead, elevated blood lead in only less than 10-year-olds, but Washington State wants it in less than 15-year-olds, that platform can adjudicate those reporting requirements, put in that system by the public health agency, and send the appropriate case reports on behalf of the healthcare organization to the public health agency where it belongs. It's definitely an advantage for healthcare because you connect once to the AIMS platform, you send the case reports there, and they get delivered to the appropriate public health agency based on those reporting requirements.
And just to elaborate here further, the AIMS platform, the AIMS acronym is about 8 words or 10 words long. It's the Association for Public Health Laboratories Informatics Messaging Service is the full spell out of it. But basically what it allows providers to do is there are a bunch of different ways for providers to get data to the AIMS platform, and then it's distributed by patient zip code or other information to the appropriate health department. And the electronic case reporting components are part of promoting interoperability with adopted standards that are included in certified electronic health record technology. I just put that up as a point so that if we're looking at making a recommendation in this space down the line, again, it ties back around to certification as well.
Thank you, Ike. I'm going to ask a question. This is a topic that I'm very interested in. We do have several pharmacy settings, such as hospitals and long-term post-acute or long-term care, that have to report in relationship to antibiotic stewardship. How does electronic case reporting mesh with electronic stewardship? We do know that the community pharmacies are being looked at by the CDC as a way to bring them into antibiotic stewardship. Do you have any thoughts on how these, number one, how these two processes, electronic case reporting and antibiotic stewardship programs, are different, and how can pharmacy sort of merge these programs together and move it across the nation and in all practice settings within pharmacy?
Thanks, Shelley. I'm not that familiar with the antibiotic stewardship, and maybe I'll ask other colleagues from CDC if they want to comment. I suspect it's related and associated more with the National Healthcare Safety Network reporting than right. reporting. So ECR is reportable conditions to the jurisdictional, state, local, tribal, territorial, based on their list of reportable conditions. NHSN reporting is made available to the public health agency, but is generally reported directly to CDC on their behalf. So I think we would have to do some discussions here to determine how those two can mesh together. I mean, we've certainly had conversations with that program previously of, can data flow to multiple partners at the same time using some of these shared infrastructures. But unfortunately, I can't say a whole lot more than that related to what gets reported through that antibiotic stewardship program. But others on the phone may be able to assist me.
Anybody else from the CDC want to respond to that? I guess not. Well, it's food for thought. Maybe a parking lot item, Tricia Lee. Hans?
Thank you. And thank you for the presentations. I have a follow-up question that is possibly a combination of Laura and Ike in particular. In context of pharmacists and being more involved in the test-to-treatment processes where tests are being done at pharmacy as well, where do you see, and others are curious as well, where do you see the potential, the need for either the use of case reporting by pharmacists and or lab reporting for the test results? What's currently being used to report those test results, and what do you see needed there to advance one, the other, both? What are your perspectives on that?
Do you want to comment on, it really is kind of point of care test reporting related to jurisdictional laws?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just to elaborate on what Laura was starting to say, there may be jurisdictional law that applies to who needs to report what under what circumstance. For example, looking at Texas during the public health emergency, there was a governor's executive order that required any entity that was using an FDA authorized test to detect COVID to report the results to the public health department. As a specific example, that it's a little different than our usual course of business in terms of looking at reporting data. But I think part of it is we're really seeing an evolution in the testing environment, brought on perhaps by COVID as kind of a first step, as we're looking to newer testing environments and more at-home kind of testing that I think is something that we're going to, pharmacy-based testing, are things that I think we're going to need to figure out how to adjust to. And it may very well be that as you're looking at conducting laboratory tests, that the ELR requirements may apply in addition to anything about ECR. And again, that depends upon each state or what law applies in terms of who is defined to report or required to report data, whether it says any testing facility or test facilities that are testing for X, Y, and Z, or there are a number of different permutations from a language perspective that could address who might be included in a reporting requirement.
And on that point, today, for reporting of such test results done by the test performed by the pharmacy, what is currently being used to communicate that to the appropriate public health authorities? Is that ELR or is it something else? Is it portal? What's generally used there? Or is somebody else?
Again, looking back to COVID-19 in particular, pharmacies had a number of different ways that they could report those test results to public health. Recognizing that many pharmacies did not or do not have the capabilities to generate HL7 messages, which is public health's preferred standard for the submission of ELR and indeed is consistent with promoting interoperability program requirements. But again, due to the nature of the PHE, the public health emergency, we adapted our framework and worked nationally with the CDC to develop a comma-separated value format for submitting and ingesting data. We modified our systems that we could then ingest a CSV file after it was securely transferred to us using secure FTP or a number of other different transport standards.
Yeah, so perhaps maybe as part of the discussion that we are about to go into, consider, is there a need to further standardize that, explore the use of ELR, explore the use of FHIR, stay with CSV files, maybe one of the considerations in the discussion.
Oh, and I think a key piece is really understanding what tests or what laboratory tests are being performed in the pharmacy environment and whether they align to conditions that public health is interested or needs to receive data on.
Right.
What's the best mechanism for doing that? In the chat, there was a discussion around looking at flu vaccines or flu testing for flu and like, and we also do run a flu surveillance program that behaves a little or operates a little bit differently than electronic lab reporting using a sentinel-based approach. So there are several different ways that things could fit in depending upon the particular condition or conditions that are being tested.
Right. Yeah. So let's jot that down as a note that we need to talk a little bit further about to see what ONC may be able to do to help advance that or address something in that space. Yeah.
And I think part of that is really what's the roadmap of right. What are going to be available in the future and how do they relate to public health concerns.
Right. On switching a little bit on topic, is that on the other discussion around ISO Gateway, Data Lake, et cetera, any questions or comments that anybody has? I know that I have one, but before asking that, anybody else? Lina, the question that I had is you made a reference to PPRL, which then gets into the identification ability of de-identified patient records and still having some level of connection across them as they are being managed within public health context. What's generally the experience that as you have an ISO gateway as an environment around that, as data from different states, from different jurisdictions on a individual come together of the use of PPRL or like mechanisms to actually get a more complete record of that person across all those different areas, or where some of the challenges still are to make that patient matching opportunity better, particularly considering is that how do we need to get everybody to then use the same kind of mechanisms, algorithms, whatever else, to enable the same patient to be matched correctly, however they are flowing through. And the challenges with re-identification, depending on what data is being used to establish that more secure key, which in the end, depending on what you put in, is not necessarily as secure that you can start to re-identify. Any experience that you have with the success, the challenges on enabling that patient matching, that being one of the topics in general as well.
Yeah, great question. I'll start and then invite Nabil and actually Audie to weigh in here as well on some of the work that's been happening at CDC. But I'll just start by saying where we are in implementation of PPRL. We have been using it at CDC for our pharmacy data feed in particular. We do not receive any of the identified data at CDC. So this occurs prior to data being put into the data lake so that we're only having access to redacted data at CDC. We've been using it with pharmacy. We are encouraging jurisdictions to onboard to PPRL and leverage that as a tool, not only to improve reporting at the national level, but to help them with their own deduplication and record linkage at the state level, and also to provide them with some additional opportunities to do data linkage between different data sets at the jurisdiction level. So there's a lot happening, but the onboarding for jurisdictions is in the early phases. So we have not done as much work with that particular data set. But Audie or Nabil, do you want to weigh in and share a little bit about what we've been doing with the pharmacy data?
Lynn, I can start, and Audie can chime in. So with the pharmacy data, I think that was very helpful. PPRL has been very helpful to us for deduplication of the pharmacy records that come in. And also, I think we were able to go across if a person received a COVID vaccine across multiple pharmacies, we were able to make that connection. And as Lynn mentioned, we are expanding with the routine immunization data that's coming in, working with the jurisdictions. One challenge has been with PPRL is slightly in the value add to the jurisdictions, like what is the value added for them in the PPRL implementation. As Lynn mentioned, that one of the areas is also that it's also very beneficial for them, for their programs also. And we are still, I think, at the early stages of implementing PPRL. We worked with RD, and if RD, you can talk to that one. I think the collaboration that we had looking at the PPRL immunization data and the other data set that you had in conducting that research study.
Adi, any additional notes, or should we go to Shelley with a question? Why don't you jump in?
I'll go ahead, and maybe Adi can come in later. We know about the IZ data lake. How does this fit into this whole aspect of electronic case reporting and or immunizations that pharmacy can leverage into this process? So the IZ gateway, I guess.
Oh, the IZ gateway. I'm sorry. I thought you said the data lake. I think that's a great question. We currently do not have pharmacies onboarded to the IZ gateway. We have focused in the last couple of years on trying to implement IIS to IIS data exchange. as well as federal agency data exchange with jurisdiction IISs. And that was based on a landscape analysis that we did at CDC that involved a lot of stakeholder engagement. And those are the things that were prioritized by all of our partners as highest priority, and particularly the federal agency connections, since in many jurisdictions, those don't exist at all. And so there's a significant gap in the data that they are receiving in their IIS, in their immunization information system, because there's no connection to the federal agency. So we have prioritized that in the last couple of years. We've been able to successfully onboard the Department of Veterans Affairs so that data is flowing to, I believe it's 42 jurisdictions who have VA facilities within them that are now receiving that federal data. Since pharmacies are in many cases largely connected to the jurisdiction IIS already, either directly or through a data exchange partner, that hasn't been as high of a focus as we continue to implement the federal agency connections and at some point wrap those up, that would be an area I think worth looking at again to see, even if they're connected, are there ways to streamline that and reduce the burden?
Great, thank you. Pooja?
Yeah, thanks Lynn for that answer. I guess I'm a little confused because maybe I'm confusing two different things. I've been sitting in on some of the early Helios calls and you know, Helios I know is working to kind of take some of this information and you know, make a fire, you know, use fire, right, to be able to do some of this reporting. I thought that in some states, pharmacies are connected to the IZ Gateway, and I'm specifically thinking of Minnesota. But maybe I'm confusing two things. Lynn, I don't know if you know, or do they have their own state kind of gateway?
I don't know the specifics of Minnesota. They may have other ways to facilitate data exchange within the jurisdiction that they're leveraging. Okay. I can certainly look into that and see if I can get some additional information for you. One thing I did want to note in the chat is the IZ Gateway and PPRL are not connected. The PPRL service is not a part of what is provided through the IZ Gateway. So I just wanted to make that clear so there's no confusion there.
Thank you.
Mike.
Yeah, from a public health perspective, you know, looking at states or other jurisdictional IISs, we use it for a variety of purposes, or can use it data for a variety of purposes, certainly looking at coordinating care at the individual level, but we also use the data in aggregate to understand what immunization trends are at the jurisdictional level. So it's really rather important that we, when we think about a source of truth, really one of the goals or hopes for many of the IISs are to have comprehensive information about immunizations at the population level. So I think that's a factor in place. And as we're looking at routing, you know, what are the best connection options for different entities and what laws apply is also a consideration.
Thank you, Ike. Pooja, you had another question?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Christian for pointing this out in the chat. You know, NCPDP is piloting the national reporting model around this for pharmacies. I know STC Health was on a couple weeks ago. We didn't really talk about it then, but we may want to pull in some of those folks just to talk about what that effort is going on as well, because I know those are using current HL7 standards and NCPDP standards. So maybe worth kind of digging into that a little bit in one of these meetings.
Great. Ike?
One of the other things that does occur for some jurisdictions with their IISs is that it may be tied to things like Medicaid programs or vaccines for children programs, so that it goes beyond just an immunization information service, but actually is part of, or maybe part of, a participating provider's reporting requirement for either Medicaid or a vaccines for children program, and submitting data to the IIS is part of the participant's requirements and influences reimbursement to some providers for payment for services, or validating that a state-provided vaccine was actually administered to a qualified patient. So that's another factor that needs to get considered as we're thinking about how data is routed and what data is included in any submission.
Thank you, Ike. I have a question in relationship to IIS and electronic case reporting. Is there any aspect of combining all of this information? We've got so many different, and I'm not talking now, but I'm talking long range, especially to the CDC team. Is there any way that we can, and I know that you're doing it through the identifying the data elements that are important, but when we have all these different processes in place, and it becomes so cumbersome to the workflow and to the productivity, especially in the pharmacy arena, is there any thought of combining all of this into one standard type of exchange?
This is Laura. I'll start. I'm not sure that we've had the discussion of should it be one reporting mechanism for the clinical provider reporting and condition reporting and immunization reporting. Certainly at a public health agency level, the two reporting data sources are often, used together in determining what public health action, I talked about ELR and ECR coming together, the integration of immunization data with case report data at a public health agency is an important component as well. But I think the details, and Lynn, maybe you can speak to some of the specific things that are in an immunization report that may not necessarily be that need to be reported, that might be different than case report.
And it's an interesting topic, and in various discussions in high tech before, the question is when ELR, when case report, when immunization, because there's some overlapping data needs, there's some things that might be able to be optimized further. From the conversation, it sounds like that having a better understanding of whether the source is the original ordering provider, whether it's the lab, whether it's in this case the pharmacy, what's really the appropriate set of reporting, and where can we use the same standards where as much as possible feasible, so that there's consistency, we can route it to the variety of parties the same way. Going back to some of the comments that I make, jurisdictional variations on what is reported at that point in time by whom, that sounds like an area in the context of the pharmacy topic and the expansion of test to treat, that conversation needs to be had there as well. Should we progress some of where there is a need to report? Should we progress, and how can we best optimize the data flows, whether to use an ELR, whether to use a case report or immunization report or something else to improve upon what we currently have. So I'm hoping that as part of the discussion that we're going to have, that there might be some recommendation on what ONC could do there to help advance that in collaboration with, and then we need to name the areas where we think that might be helpful.
And Hans, just to interject really quickly, this is Ike, is that public health uses data for a wide variety of purposes, and the same data may or may not be necessary, or the same resolution of data or additional detail may be required for the particular purpose. So that if you're looking, for example, as a case investigation, it may be critical to know that a vaccine was administered but not necessarily the route of the way that that particular vaccine was delivered. Where if we're looking at immunization services for other purposes, the route, method, lot number, et cetera, becomes highly useful and highly necessary information. So one of the concerns that would need to be addressed, if you were to look to a single standard, is how do you address those data variation needs for the particular purpose? And if you went to all the required data for every potential need for that data to be reported, you're looking at an awful lot of perhaps unnecessary detail, again, depending upon the particular need at the particular moment. So that's, I think, part of the balance that needs to get addressed.
I completely agree that that's one of the aspects to look at. And we don't want to send too much, not too little. We don't want to send too many different variations, et cetera. And that's not an easy balance, as we're finding as we talk about ELR, ECR, immunizations, and related topics on how to do that. Helios Align and Optimize is working on that as well to figure out how can we balance that need. So better, or are we in a good spot today? I'm wondering, we're looking at, we have two more hands raised, and we wanted to transition, Shelley, I think, to long-term recommendations as well. Shall we ask Eliel and Lynn to be the last ones?
Yes, please. Yes, go ahead.
So Hans and Shelley, the thought that is coming to mind here is if we are seeking other agencies that, you know, need these pieces of information as well for kind of the same purpose. I'm thinking specifically here the FDA, their surveillance systems of drugs. And I think they would be interested in knowing what we're putting together here, and there may be other agencies as well. So we may learn more from them what they could leverage here from this discussion. Thanks.
Great, thank you, Lynn.
Yeah, I just really quickly wanted to add to this conversation about sort of how do ECR and immunization reporting touch one another. And I think Laura touched on some of those, others have as well. But I think one of the important things to highlight is that with immunization reporting, those requirements are set by individual jurisdictions, and there isn't the same kind of national reporting requirement or authorization for immunization reporting that there is for some of the ECR type work. And so that is why we have more variation on the immunization side with reporting, and that clearly impacts some of those reporting entities like pharmacies that deal with multiple jurisdictions. And I think that's something that maybe is a topic for another day, but I think the policy framework that supports that reporting has a significant impact on how it works and the variation that we see.
Thank you, Lynn. I think we're going to transition into our recommendations. Hopefully, if we have any time after that, we can continue the discussion, but we've got a good little less than a half an hour to do our recommendations.
Right, and thank you to all the speakers and the discussion. That was great. And I think that also will have some good material and thoughts on what to ingest into the long-term recommendations in particular. So looking forward to that. So again, thank you very much. Great presentations. Shall we then go? I see that the spreadsheet has come up on where we can look at. A couple of introductory comments there, and then we'll go through it and start to further add to it. On the left-hand side in column A, you'll see a couple of minor adjustments from the last time around that try to organize the comments a little bit more along the ones that are alike or together in different areas, and that there's a line break in between. So not precise, but that might help also focus in on where could we have a recommendation that covers multiple like comments together. But don't feel limited by that grouping in that sense. In column B, you'll start to see a little bit more red markup coming up as well. And if you scroll down, I think it's about rows, five and beyond, you'll see the word placeholder dropping in. You'll see it behind the name. That's where we are looking for the follow-up discussions that various of the task force members signed up for to discuss, and then drop in the enhanced or the proposed recommendation in that area. So you see a number of placeholders in there that we're looking forward to seeing those pop up in the next week or so. So have a look at that. But today we're going to focus on the long-term question. And if you go to the first one at the top, we'll gently look at the different themes that we've had, standards and data exchange, et cetera, et cetera, and want to get a sense of whether there are possibly other recommendations, major ones that to insert, or there is a concern with how the direction of the recommendation is currently going. Again, not to get to the final wording, but to go through that. So we see under the standards and data exchange, we see in long term, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 5 recommendations that start to be drafted. The first one around working together between the CDC and the public health community to create a set of metrics and outcomes. We have a second one, opportunity for information system to be certified and consistent to provide also consistent access to electronic health information. The third one, looking at working with ONC, working with CMS to develop model regulatory language for integrating pharmacy, public health, or state adoption. Next one around certification criteria of key functionality. Perhaps there's an opportunity to combine it with the prior one that's also talking about certification and create one general one around that. And then the last one, ongoing process for evaluating, rating, and certifying human-computer interoperability. And that's, I think that one was meant more on the actual interactions, not the software going into it, as currently is in place. So we may want to clarify it a little bit more to see, does that combine with a couple of the other ones, or does it stand alone? So looking there for thoughts, ideas, are we comfortable with the direction that that's heading? And then after that, particularly looking a little bit at the certification, where do we have two recommendations, or do we have one recommendation that we could merge and blend together? Any thoughts on that? Are we going the right direction with these recommendations generally? And if we don't hear anybody jump up, I need to make sure that I can see the chat as well. It disappears from my screen. Okay. Question on the certification. Question for Stephen and David in particular. It seemed from the discussion that we might have two types of focus when we talk certification. One would be on the software itself. Can it do certain things, support certain interoperability? But the other one is that focusing on the actual interactions that are out in practice, and not sure whether that might relate to what ONC currently looks at real world testing, where the actual implementations are subject to some level of review all the way up to certification or reporting in some fashion to understand how it actually is working. Can you clarify a little bit whether we are talking one or the other or both?
Go ahead. Well, I just wanted to jump in and sort of set the pace for what Hans is talking about, Ike, if that's okay. So when we talk about certification, and when we talk about it, especially using IIS or some of the other the other processes that are out there for pharmacy to exchange information, we don't really call it certification. It's sort of a testing mode that we go through to assure that the systems can talk to each other. most pharmacies and pharmacy system vendors get a little weary of the word certification because it could be very expensive for them, and these are then become more unfunded mandates for some of the pharmacy vendors and their customers. So I want to be wary of the term certification in pharmacy because of the implications that it can take. Pharmacies do follow state laws, and if it does become part of a state requirement, then they move forward with that. But I just want to be cautious of how we approach this topic. And others, and I'll go ahead, Ike. I know I interrupted you, and I apologize for that.
No, not at all. I very much appreciate your comments and your concerns. I really, really do. One of the ongoing efforts at ONC right now is looking at potentially moving towards certification of at least some public health systems or interoperability on the public health side of the equation for looking at receiving data. Just to give you a little bit of history, you know, one of the things that came out of HITECH was certification of electronic health records systems, really focused on initially on electronic health record systems and their ability to both perform certain functions as well as generate messages in nationally adopted standardized formats. In the last several years, there's been an interest on ONC's part in potentially exploring how to work with on the public health side to look at potentially certifying public health systems, at least at the interoperability level, to kind of validate that the public health system can successfully receive a message that is sent in the nationally adopted standardized format. So one of the thoughts in this space is looking at ensuring that the system or a system that is sending data is indeed doing so in a manner that is consistent with the national standard or nationally adopted format, and the system that is receiving it can also receive the data in that nationally standard format to help avoid issues during implementation about whether a message is indeed compliant with those requirements, to try to minimize the amount of extra effort required to actually establish an interface. Currently, for example, as public health is onboarding a provider for things like electronic case reporting, we spend, and the provider spends, quite a lot of time validating the data that's being transmitted because the provider is using local codes that may be very appropriate for their system, but are not consistent with the nationally adopted standards. So there's a lot of work and rework necessary in that space. If we were to look at potentially certifying the interface capabilities helps reduce that extra work by having a system that indeed generates things that people are expecting to catch, and again validates that the folks that are catching or can receive things that are consistent with the framework on the sending side of it.
Thank you, Ike. Stephen.
Yeah, thanks, Shelley. And I know there's a lot of hands up, so I'll be brief. I mean, I really appreciate your comments that, you know, putting in a program of certification for a certain segment of the health IT ecosystem is a huge cost and potential burden. But the question is, how can we get to the point we want to get to otherwise? Right. I mean, as a physician, I mean, I really support the idea of leveraging pharmacists to provide appropriate spectrum of care, you know, to our shared patients. But we have to do that. And we discussed it earlier, we have to do it in the context of assuring that that care is supported by all the appropriate tools and data and functionality that it needs to be safe and effective and coordinated with the rest of the care going on in the ecosystem. I mean, if there's a way to do that without assuring that pharmacists are using an appropriately connected health IT system, if there's a way to do that without certification, I'll be really interested in exploring that. But it seems that, you know, given the success that we've seen with certification on the EHR side, you know, and the consistency and standards that have been developed, it's hard for me to imagine a way to really bring pharmacists into the treatment process fully and appropriately without such a support.
Pooja, thank you, Stephen.
Yeah, I think Stephen pretty much summed up what I was going to say, but I do want to add to that. I mean, I know in the HTI 1, there were some pharmacy workflows that were, there was an RFI about pharmacy workflows and interoperability in that proposed rule. I know they were really focused on EHRs, but I think I would just have this task force really consider, you know, I agree with Stephen. I think that we need to figure out a way, and it doesn't have to be, you know, full certification, but somehow ensuring that we can exchange the data with the pharmacist. So really nothing more to add, but I want to keep that in mind. Thank you.
Ellie?
Thank you. So different topic here, going back to that PPIL discussion that we had. And as you can see, CDC has made some great strides there to get data, you know, preserving the privacy at the same time they're linking and providing results. At the same time, you see other groups, agencies doing the same thing, right? So PCORnet use one, NC3, the COVID collaborative uses a different setup, and FDA considering different things. So it seems to me like ONC would be well-placed here to work on a standardization on how these hash tokens are generated and shared and matched. That could benefit all the agencies and all the organizations that are, you know, also providing data, like the pharmacies in this case here. So that might be an important recommendation for ONC in terms of its standards definition for that.
Elliot, would you be able to write something up in whichever theme makes most sense to address that? Because patient matching and ability to streamline that is certainly a key point that we want to have a recommendation for on how to further advance that.
Definitely. Do you want that on the short-term one to be like more of a evaluation of the needs?
If you feel that there is an opportunity short-term already, then we should put it in one of the short-term categories.
I would think both. Yes.
Yeah. So.
Excellent. Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Afton.
Sorry. Thanks, Shella. I'll be quick. I just wanted to mention, Pooja had talked about the HTI-1 comments. That would be really important to look at from a pharmacy workflow perspective, what we had suggested in those. And then just wanted to reiterate that one of our biggest challenges for community pharmacies is being able to support current standards like HL7 and FHIR is getting the data formatted correctly. And we've really talked about that at length, but somehow we need to ensure we can exchange the data with pharmacists and really keep that top of mind.
Thank you, Afton. Scott.
I think I'm going to repeat a lot of things that have been said, so I'll be very brief. I do think certification does involve a lot of cost, and I find that difficult to put in to the very small users, that especially in pharmacy, there are the small users that it might be rather burdensome, and that has to be addressed in some manner. But I think it is within ONC's purview to work all across the HIT spectrum, and that does include pharmacy. The other point on the technology interfaces with humans, I'm really not sure to the extent to which ONC or that standards can really be defined. There's a lot of psychosocial and human factors that come into play. Standards tend to want to be one thing, even if you have 15, 20 variations. That's going to be extremely difficult to come up with strict criteria. And I'm not sure if it's something that will be accomplished. That's me. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Ike?
Yeah, I just wanted to add in, when we're talking about certification here, especially if we're looking at the interface certification, at least traditionally, the certification has not been provider specific. In other words, it's not been a particular hospital getting certified. It's certification of the technology, really looking at the vendor or the HIT developer getting the technology certified on behalf of all of their customer base, so that each individual pharmacy would not have to go seek individual certification. It's a shared resource or a shared tool that may help individual pharmacies actually have an easier time of implementing interfaces because they have a tool. If we go down a certification route, if they're getting a piece of certified technology, they have some assurance built in and supported by their vendor that it would support standardized interfaces. And that can reduce the time, effort, and angst about actually being able to exchange data and kind of remove the pharmacist from having to be an IT expert or work for their particular implementation of a system to resolve an interface problem. I think the real world testing, again, is looking at the vendor side of it to validate that whatever is developed actually works in the real world, connecting to real world providers, not just a lab environment or a simulated environment. Again, trying to remove future burdens from actual users of the systems so they have an easier time in actually putting the tools to work and they can focus on the practice of their profession, not the practice of technology.
Yeah, I totally agree with you in the sense of the provider, but what we have in pharmacy, especially in the community setting, are multiple smaller vendors, unlike what we see in the consolidation of the larger EHR vendors out there. So it is a different environment. Hans?
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on a couple of comments that have been made, and then I want to pass it to David Butler to provide some perspective on his comments, and then we need to start to look at time a little bit as well.
We have 7 minutes.
Yeah, so the a couple of thoughts, and part of it is based on experience with the certification program as it currently exists and what that means. And I completely agree with the number of the sentiments that certification is more involved because it provides a level of rigor of testing and ensuring that data can be accessed and shared consistently, particularly around interoperability, which is a main topic here. So the question is that how can we make a program that effectively is aiming to establish that consistency, whether you call it certification or otherwise, how can we make that more efficient? Because that is in the best interest of everybody. And in the provider EHR space, there are small vendors and there are large vendors and everything in between that have those same challenges. Yet I will look at some of the comments that Stephen Lane made as well, is that the value proposition is the consistency. But how can we do that better and more efficiently so that that is not as burdensome as it at times is? So that, I think, is a part of it, that where we make suggestions around certification, we probably need to be more explicit about that. It need not mean the exact same thing what it is today in terms of how it's being executed, but how can we make it more efficient? The other part is that, and that's tying a little bit into Scott's comments and where I'm curious from David's perspective. Indeed, certification has typically been looking at the capabilities that are in common and where it's critical that the data is being shared. So vocabularies and using the same terminology in the vocabularies, same coding system is typically that that area of focus. User human interfaces are not beyond general design guidelines, as you can see in the current certification program. I think indeed we have to be very careful there that as we move from the data and the design practices overall to get into the more details. So I would be having some concerns around number two that David raised, but that's where I would like to pass it to David for a little bit more information and context behind it and tie it to real world testing.
Before you do that, Hans, I do want to comment on what you're talking about. Pharmacy has had a historical aspect, especially with DEA and electronic controlled substances, on going through a rigid certification process for that, that was very costly to the vendors and has been very difficult. And I think we need to learn from those experiences as we move towards standardization and certification. Pharmacies are beginning to certify, especially for clinical standardized terminology quite extensively. That's one of the roles that the pharmacy profession has taken on. And now we can move to David.
Yeah, and just to indicate this, I completely agree that efficiency of certification or testing, how can you do that with the least amount of burning, is absolutely critical. David.
Yeah, thank you. And those are great comments. And I'll just lead into my thoughts here by commenting on what you're talking about. I'm definitely in my statements creating a different paradigm. But I think the problem is we've had the paradigm that has developed over the last 50 years, which has been that we view system and system design as computers and engineering and the component of a computer system, where systems design is really the overall organizational system. So it has to include the human computer interaction, or it's not a full system design. And the issue that we've had is that because it has been so expensive, we focused much more on just the computer aspect of it. And that has functioned because the discrepancies maybe were minor, but now we're moving into a different world, with particularly with the machine learning that's being developed and the concept of AI being part of that. And I think we need to at least devote some time, some group, to start thinking about the human component of systems. Humans are part of the system of information sharing, information gathering, and they, in effect, are an extension or a partner with the computer. And that is going to be increasing and growing. We need to be thinking about that. And my first thought proposing that was what you see, and when I mentioned the work that was done by Jacob Nielsen and others, pushing the idea of usability testing. Usefulness is different from usability. Usefulness means you pack everything possible on the screen in every form to capture everything. And useful is not usable. No one could read the whole screen because your font size would be too small to get all the data on there. So we need to think about the usability testing that many of these researchers have used to see if humans are actually bringing the correct data to the system, and if they're retrieving the correct and applying the correct information from the system. And I think exploring usability testing as part of a certification process would be a good consideration. And my example I offer is the example number two. If we had
David,
been doing-
I don't want to interrupt you, but we only have just a few seconds left for public comment.
All right. Well, then I just point out that we still ask, do you have drug allergies? We don't really capture everything that applies when you talk about adverse drug reactions, because people don't understand that. So we've done a poor job so far of catching that, and I think we need to improve on that.
Thank you, David. Mike, I'm going to turn it over to you for public comment.
Sure, that'd be great. If we could put up the public comment slide. We're going to open up our meeting for verbal public comments. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause this for a moment to see if any members of public raise their hand. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands raised this time, so I'll turn it back to our co-chairs.
Right. Thank you.
Sorry, David, I didn't know if you wanted to continue your discussion. I apologize for that, but we do have a strict time stop for public comment.
Yeah, so you're saying I could jump back in, or?
Yes, you can jump back in.
Okay. And, well, I think, and Hans has already put a good point in the chat. I just think it's important that we start thinking about that human-computer interaction in the certification process. And we need to expand that area, and you can see my example of we shouldn't be asking about, do you have any drug allergies on the forms that are on the computer screen? We should be breaking those down into what really needs to be captured is which adverse drug events occurred in that patient over that length of time, and what were the surroundings that cause of an adverse effect, as an example. We don't do that today because of poor design.
Thank you. So it's certainly in this area, there is a little bit more work to be done to align the various comments and determine how far as a task force we can have consensus on the extent to which to address certification. So I invite everybody to look at that further. We're going to, based on the conversation, see whether we can have some alignment of the different components here that we might be able to run by next week. Like to go to the, if you can go to the spreadsheet again.
Yeah, while you're doing that, Hans, I do want to make a comment in relationship to how we might be able to help, and I think I put this in my recommendations, in the certification process. If we link certification to quality measures, such as measuring which pharmacies are some type of measurement on electronic case reporting or IIS or immunization reporting, if we bring those measures forward, it might help us show the industry that we need to go through a certification process. And that's what I meant by that comment or that recommendation.
Thank you. That's helpful. That's great. Okay, let's go to the pharmacist-physician collaboration. Next topic, which is row number 8. If you can scroll down just a little bit. When we look at the long term in call, and that would be 10, row 10, actually, where we have long term. We currently have a placeholder for Shelley. We have a number of different comments on the left hand side that identify potential recommendations. Based on the conversation, has anybody identified other recommendations that you're thinking of or working on for long term, on particularly the pharmacist-physician collaboration?
When you say, okay, Pooja, go ahead.
Yeah, I maybe I'm a little confused too, because I think this is where, I know we're having a small task group meeting later this week to talk about the pharmacist e-care plan. I think that was one of the items that we wanted to include with this. So I think part of the conversation needs to be how are pharmacists and physicians sharing information? And I know we have that as a tool. I think there's been some comments about possibly looking at how we add additional codified data elements. So Hans, I'm assuming that's what you're referring to.
Yes, unless anybody else already had, so that's okay. What I'm making sure.
Yeah, I'll jump in on this, Hans. You know, we have, and even through the certification process, especially through electronic prescribing, but what we've had in historically in the past is this push, this one-way exchange. What we need to do is to really promote, especially through the physician certification side, this bi-directional push of information so that the pharmacy does have information to share with the prescriber in the e-prescribing model, but they're reluctant to take that other in types of information, such as changing a prescription or different types of recommendations in the way that the certification process is now for the physician side. It's usually a push, but it's more difficult to get that information back to the physician. Pharmacies are used to receiving data from other sources, but have more difficulty in that push, that bi-directional exchange of information. I think we have a question. Go ahead.
Hello.
Ellie?
Yeah, not a question, but I was just going to say that maybe the long-term box here would be a good place for the recommendation I had earlier in terms of it's still public health, in my opinion, the FDA surveillance systems for medication. So in addition to having that recommendation for the CDC, maybe for the FDA also, in an emergency situation like we experienced with COVID, developing and rolling out a new drug was critical, as you all know, but also monitoring what are the side effects and what is taking place would also be key. And the FDA is the one doing that.
Great. Thank you. And there was also a comment that Adi made on row 7, pharmacist-physician collaboration. Anything you would like to add there, or is that can we just incorporate that as we progress with the comments, the recommendations? Adi, any additional thoughts there? Okay. In that case, we are starting to get with just a couple of minutes left. Is there, rather than jumping just to the next, are there any other areas from today that have jumped out where we can consider recommendations? Two that seem to be areas. One is around the patient matching. There probably should be some areas where we can identify how can we advance that further, and understanding how techniques such as PPRL can help. How would that work? Where would that fit to achieve more complete records? So I'd suggest that we find a spot in our listing somewhere. And the other one, and I'm curious, Ike, whether you have at this point in time some thoughts in particular, this balancing act that we have been going back and forth around in other contexts as well on ELR, ECR, other data feeds. How do you see that in the pharmacist public health collaboration in particular, but perhaps some other areas as well, on what would this task force, what should this task force look at to recommend on how to advance that or address? Is Ike still on the line or?
I'm very much sure. I wasn't sure if you were looking for a real-time response.
If you have, great. Or otherwise, is this maybe where, with a couple of people, we could collaborate on coming up with a recommendation around that over the next number of days for next week to draft something?
If you I think it's something that we can look at. I think one of the challenges in this space in particular is that each jurisdiction does have the flexibility to identify what is reportable and who needs to report what kind of data. So I think, and again, looking at what tests, if you're looking at pharmacy-based testing, as to whether it's actually the pharmacy doing the test or actually the pharmacy as an intake location or a test that's subsequently performed by an off-site testing facility, which would already be reported, if that makes any sense.
Yes. And sounds like that you would be willing to work on that. I'm certainly happy to work with you on that. Is there anybody else who is interested in that, then maybe put that in the chat so that we pull a couple of folks together on that.
I think we need to stop the discussion at this point and get ready to close. It is at the top of the hour. I do want to remind everyone that we'll be moving to task two on our next meeting, which will be on July 26th. We have several presenters coming in. Thank you, everyone, for all your time today. Appreciate it. Hans, any last few seconds?
Last couple of seconds. While we are shifting over to the next task, we can continue and will continue to work on these recommendations. So as individual groups have feedback and suggestions, drop them into the sheet. And if there are other ones that you think of, please drop them in as well so that we can start to move them into a set of recommendations down the road. So thank you very much. And thanks again to the presenters as well for today.
And thank you to the ONC team. Thank you.